AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
From the unexplained to the mundane, join us on our journey to the fringe. Hello and welcome to Journey to the Fringe. Now, don't worry about the Halloween episodes, at least. We got tons of ideas. So many ideas. You don't need to give us anything. Now, those Christmas episodes, boy, do we need your help with those.
Yeah, we're open to suggestions.
But tonight, we descend into the shadowy realm of language, and we're going to explore the uncanny, mysterious, and sometimes dangerous history of what we call curse words.
I love curse words.
I use them all the time, and I find it frankly kind of odd why we call them that.
Oh, are they about to get better?
Are they simply forbidden utterances, or do they truly carry the power to summon misfortune or even protect evil? Let's begin our dive into this with a simple but unsettling question. Chelsea, why do we call swear words curse words?
I don't know. Because they're fun?
You would think, but it's just kind of funny that it's one of the few places where curses still come up in modern society.
Yeah, I've never thought about it. It's just one of those cultural things that's just what they call, and I've never questioned it.
The phrase carries more weight than its everyday use might suggest. When you stub your toe or when traffic cuts you off and an expletive bursts forth, you're likely not thinking about summoning ancient spirits. Yet the language we use for these verboten utterances is a relic of more superstitious times, when words themselves spoken aloud were believed to possess a real, perhaps dangerous power. The word curse emerges from late Old English, curse, meaning a prayer, curse without an E, I should say. Because it sounds the same.
But you know what? Now that you're saying that, there are things where I do say, like, I will say, curse this. Curse this whatever I'm working on. Like, I have said it. Like, is that weird of me?
This damned thing or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn you straight to hell. Something like that.
Curse you, you son of a bitch. Okay, you get my drift. Got it.
We actually do that to Craig quite a bit.
Yes, we're constantly cursing Craig. Maybe that's why he doesn't work.
The word in Old English, curse, meaning a prayer that evil or harm befall someone. The act of cursing someone then was a literal invocation, a spoken desire for another's misfortune, sometimes believed to bring down divine or supernatural wrath. Later, wow. By the 13th century, to curse had morphed into the use of profane or blasphemous language, words thought too potent or dangerous for polite society. And in American English, cuss is just a dialectical variation of the word. So cussing is the exact same thing, which blew my mind.
This is all blowing my mind.
But what connects blasphemy magic in the four-letter words we know today? To explore this is to journey into older primal layers of culture, where language was an act of magic, binding, casting, a summoning. The spoken word and the magical spell, the curse and the cuss, were once the same ritual. Now, long before wizards and witches haunted the imagination, the human fear of language's power was shaping our vocabularies. One of the most striking examples of this lies hidden in the seemingly innocuous name of bears, which sounds weird, but yeah, picture yourself walking in the wild forests of ancient Europe.
Okay.
To the early Indo-Europeans who hunted, worshipped, and feared this formidable animal, the bear was more than a beast. It was a living threat, and it was believed to utter its real name was to summon it, risking attack or misfortune. So as a result of this, in Germanic languages, which includes English, the word bear doesn't mean the animal bear.
What does it mean?
It means brown. It literally translates to the brown one.
What?
A way to reference the animal without calling its name directly.
What's his real name?
We don't know.
What? It had to have had a name at some point.
Yeah, but it was before written language and they stopped using the name.
Oh, and my
not
God.
Just Germanic languages either. Similarly, Slavic medved, which means honey eater, and Baltic languages call them loki, meaning the hairy ones. And even the real Proto-Indo-European term for bear survives somewhat in Greek with arctos, but that means Arctic, and it's Latin, which means Arctic now.
I am so impressed that they're so scary. We literally still do not call them by their name.
This is like where the term curse comes from, is words could summon. They had this power back in the day, so it would actually shape language through it. The taboo superstition is more than a linguistic game. It's a window into the world where speaking the truth, the secret name of a thing, a bear, a demon, even a deity, was fraught with peril. If a name can summon, it's in danger.
I will say, I still believe that words have power, because even at work, like, you can't say out loud on a slow day that it's a slow day. You can't say it.
Yeah, you jinxed us or something like that. Don't jinx it.
Yeah, like, you don't say it. Somebody said it the other day and I was like, you can't just say that. And then they jinxed us and then it got busy. Yeah.
But I find that so crazy that, like, throughout most of Europe, we have no idea for bear because it just stopped being used.
That's crazy. My mind is totally blown by that one.
We'll get busy if you say it's quiet, so you can't say bear.
Yeah. Exactly. That's crazy. My mind is blown. Don't say bear. No, but we're saying bear. You can't say the name that we don't even know anymore. It's gotten so out of hand.
Successful campaign that we don't know it.
That's so crazy. Okay. So I guess we've never said bear. We still don't.
I have to assume bear attacks are way down from that time.
You gotta imagine they would be. Wow, that's crazy. Is this the end of the episode?
Yeah. Bye. But this isn't just a Northern European superstition. Across ancient societies, the prohibition on using real names or speaking without careful indirection was a survival tactic. Such superstitions have left their mark in toponyms, folklore, and even in the way we refer to certain animals, like the example we gave there. Now, what happens when a word is believed not just to reference an object, but to actively shape, bind, or destroy reality? Here we step into the world of curses as magic. We're going to talk about defixions and coiling spells now. Power of the curse was formalized in ritual. From the 5th century BCE onwards, people turned to defixiones. These are small inscribed tablets of lead or bronze, etched with words intended to bring misfortune, harm, or binding to their targets. I really like this thing, Chelsea. I feel like people who work in customer-facing jobs should bring back this idea.
Okay, I'll bring it back.
Basically, they're little pieces of bronze that you etch curses into for people. So these curses would be shockingly specific or entirely formulaic, invoking infernal deities or liminal gods, Hecate, Pluto, Persephone, or simply naming the victim, binding them with a string of gibberish or a list of the body parts to be afflicted. A few examples. This was found at a Roman bath. Docimedes has lost 2 gloves and asks that the thief responsible should lose their minds and eyes in the goddess's temple. A curse from Germany. The human who stole Vario's cloak, may the worms, cancer, and maggots penetrate his hands, head, feet, as well as his limbs and marrows.
What do you think he did? Wow, that's pretty harsh.
He stole Vario's cloak.
Wow, that's quite the curse for stealing a cloak.
I mean, cloaks were pretty valuable back in the day,
that's true.
It could have been a really nice cloak.
It might have been his life savings on that cloak.
Yeah. And a spell that found in Egypt, wrapped in a lock of hair in lead. I bind you, Athenodoros, daughter of Theodora, so that you cannot sleep or eat or find peace until you come to me. So very weird.
That one seemed like a love spell.
You gotta get your feelings out there. It was a love spell, but also it's a curse still, nonetheless.
Yeah, love spells are curses.
I feel like that should make a comeback, just as like something that you do to get your stress out from a hard day of talking to customers.
Yeah. I hope nobody looks in my desk at work. Chelsea, why do you have all of these binded? Just a desk full of them.
Why is there so much bronze in your desk?
Don't ask, okay?
Just glare at them and start chiseling.
There's another one in.
Now, sometimes the words themselves inscribed on these were nonsensical mystic voices, basically, or palindromes like the Seder Square. These were thought to be understood only by spirits or demons, lending supernatural efficacy to even the most ordinary acts of vengeance. Which is actually where we derive some of our magic words, like abracadabra.
Really?
We'll get into that later. These spells and curses were not only for enemies, some were inscriptions for love, courtroom victories, sports competitions, or to right perceived injustices. Often the act of writing itself or the proper recitation by a ritual professional was thought to guarantee the outcome.
Oh, so it's like...
you need to get your feelings out.
It's not just getting your feelings out. You can do that. Oh, God, I can't remember. Of course it is. You put me on the spot for trying to remember something. I was just watching a Pauly Shore, and he was talking about his journaling, where he writes about what he wants to happen. Like, I can't remember what it's called.
A promise? Is that what it's called?
No, it's not a promise. I can't remember what the fuck it's called. But you talk about what you want to happen as if it's already happened so that it happens. That's still a thing.
Positive affirmation? Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, essentially, yeah.
But, you know, with maggots burrowing into people's eyes.
Yeah, but they were using it for positive, like, court outcomes and stuff like that, you said.
Yeah, they could. But it was kind of like making sure the words were out there would bring it out.
Yeah, like manifesting. That's the word, manifesting.
And that's the whole idea of the curse, is words have power, both good and bad. Like, when it first comes out, we think of curse as like bringing about a bear, but it's anything. It can bring about anything, not just the negative.
That makes sense. If they have power, like, to manifest something good in your life, it would mean the same thing to manifest something bad. So I guess it makes sense. It's all very logical. It's still belief now.
Yeah. We've said it several times now with examples.
Yeah. We still do these things. We still don't say bear.
We say bear, not the other one.
We dare not speak its name.
And hey, neither of us have been attacked by bears. So.
It's true.
As we're going through the history, you can see that there's a deep theme here that the words have power, and particularly names have power too. In folklore, you see this a lot of places. To invoke a name, especially of a supernatural being, say a Rumpelstiltskin from Germanic legend.
Oh, shit.
Could bind it or banish it, but knowing and speaking a name could also bring doom. Cultures the world over are filled with name taboos, such as Ashkenazi Jews. Apotropaic names were given to sick children to confuse the angel of death. Alter, meaning old, or necros, meaning not handsome, were given to these people to avoid the angel.
Dear God.
And across not many handsome. Societies, saying the name of a demon or the dead was forbidden, lest it draw their presence.
Huh.
Even today, superstitions persist around unlucky name, with entire family lines burdened by cursed roots. In the very act of naming, like the Kennedy curse or the avoidance of the name like Adolf throughout Europe.
Do you think that's curse or just bad stigma around the name?
Is there really a difference?
Ah, that's true. This is all very philosophical.
There was an entire era in feudal Japan where they gave people names that were terrible, like smells of rotting shit or something along those lines, just because they thought that the gods wouldn't be as interested in them if they had terrible names.
Interesting.
By the Middle Ages and Renaissance, the belief in magical potency of words had been systematized in grimoires, texts devoted to the practices of magic spells. These books, from the Key of Solomon to the Lesser Key of Solomon and the notorious Grimorium Verum, often contained long lists of invocations, arcane spells, and rituals intended to summon and command supernatural entities. Some grimoires wandered between prayers, oaths, and outright maledictions, ritual cursings in the name of angels, demons, or even God. The lines blur between the sacred and the profane. Christianity itself, in the Old Testament, cursing was a forbidden but recognized act. And in other traditions, the right spell could both protect and destroy. As we keep going forward, we get to reference from last week, Chelsea. If there's a cursed word lurking in Western culture, it's surely the name of Shakespeare's play Macbeth.
Oh, yeah.
For centuries, actors and theater practitioners have refused to utter the play's name indoor, except within the script, opting instead for euphemisms like the Scottish play. Why do they do this? According to theatrical superstition, speaking Macbeth in a theater is believed to bring catastrophe. Accidents, ghostly mishaps, injuries, even death. Legends tell of a coven of witches placing a curse upon the script because it used real incantation. Lines like double, double toil and trouble forever doomed those who invoked it carelessly. Historical records fuel the legend. The original actor playing Lady Macbeth is said to have died suddenly before opening night. Shakespeare himself allegedly had to step in. Throughout the centuries, productions of Macbeth have seen falls from the stage, flying props, fires, and even riots, most infamously the Dead Astor Place riot in 1849. How deep does this belief run? Even today, if an actor accidentally lets slip Macbeth in a...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Theater, a ritual must be performed to dispel the curse. These rituals are almost magical incantations themselves. You have to step outside the theater, turn around 3 times, spit over your left shoulder, swear or recite a cleansing line from another Shakespeare play, knock and wait for readmittance.
Wow.
This tradition embodies the persistence of magic thinking, the legacy of cursed words, and the theater's enduring enchantment with the power of language itself. Now, spoken curses are not the only province of Shakespearean actors. The magical force of malevolent blessings, their positive counterpart, runs like a dark thread through global folklore. Some of the most notorious curses include the curse of Pharaoh, the ancient Egyptian inscribed warning on tombs, anyone who disturbed the eternal rest of the king would be beset by misfortune, illness, or death. The legend reached fever pitch after the discovery of King Tutankhamun's tomb, when mysterious deaths among archaeologists fueled media hysteria. I believe we did an episode.
I think we did too, yeah.
Actually, it might be a Halloween episode.
I think it was a Halloween episode, actually. Again, we're good on Halloween episodes, don't worry.
The Bell Witch, the 19th century Tennessee Bell family, was terrorized by a supernatural singing, cursing, even alleged poisoning the patriarch. The Bell Witch's threats and curses became a regional legend, speaking to American anxieties about evil gender unknown. The Hope Diamond, this stunning blue gem, is said to doom its owners to death and disaster, another echo of the ancient belief that objects too can channel powers of word, a curse, a wish. And familial curses. Many cultures hold stories of lineages blighted by ancient words of wrath, cursed for 7 generations by the indiscretions, real or imagined, ancestor.
In these tales, the act of uttering, inscribing, or merely believing in a curse can reshape reality. Misfortune explained, tragedy given meaning, and chaos rendered understandable through the conduit of language.
Of course, where there are words believed to wound, there are also words used to heal, to defend, to protect. Enter the realm of apotropaic magic, from the Greek meaning to turn away, the tradition of using words, charms, or rituals to ward off evil or supernatural attacks. Some of the most enduring apotropaic words and symbols include the term abracadabra, known today as the magician's stage word. Its origins are far older. In ancient Rome, it was prescribed as an amulet against fever and harm. Written in diminishing triangle, the word itself was thought to funnel the illness away, and satyr square, this 5-word palindrome, was inscribed on walls, amulets, and tablets across Europe as a guardian charm to reverse curses, or repel evil spirits. Charms, gestures, and folklore rituals, spinning over your shoulder, knocking on wood, sweeping negative energy with a broom, wearing a hamsa or evil eye bead. Buildings, too, are often inscribed with a symbolic witch mark or daisy wheel, written prayer, and protective sigils, testimonies to the faith humans place in the written or spoken words' ability to shape destiny. Now, can you break or neutralize a curse with ancient and modern rituals? Curses and curse words are ancient, so too are practices of neutralizing. Diverse cultures developed entire systems, rituals, spells, and psychological strategies to defang the maledictions woven by word, will, or envy.
I got one. Knock on wood.
I think that's an incredibly common one in European background.
I do it all the time.
Common ones are cleansing rituals. A couple are bathing in salt water, using sacred herbs, and smudging with smoke features in many traditions to purify a space or person believed to be cursed. Breaking the cursed object. If a curse is tied to an object, destroying it, often with fire, water, or burial, is thought to end its power. Protective amulets and talismans. Wearing a cross, very Christian way, the Nazar or evil eye.
That's to break curses?
Oh yeah, the evil
eye. Wearing a cross.
Oh yeah, well, the cross protects you.
I have an evil eye that I wear.
And I always love the evil eyes to protect against. Just the wanting eye of, and it is literally just like, I like your shirt, which would curse the shirt because it shows envy towards it.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah.
These are believed to create a shield against malevolent energies. Rituals to reflect or return the curse. Mirror boxes or return to sender spells are common in both folk magic and modern witchcraft. Positive affirmations and support. Psychology tells us that belief in curses can cause anxiety, stress, and self-fulfillment. Prophecies, so rituals of self-empowerment, support circles, and education can help break the hold of such curses. Repentance and forgiveness. Religious traditions often describe confessions to annul self-spoken curses, words of hate, or ancestral maledictions, or community rituals, incantations, prayers, or cleansing ceremonies done by groups are thought to generate stronger protection. An echo of how curses themselves once operated as social acts.
From breaking eggs to breaking chains, from ritual baths to modern therapy, the quest to neutralize the power of the curse word continues.
And I just love, like, you can see in those, like, seven different categories of breaking curses, multiple different parts of Christianity.
Which is interesting. Yeah, there's a lot of heavily Christian stuff that is breaking curses. Like, it's so... But
you don't think of it as a superstitious religion, but it's, like, it's building on what came before it, which everything does.
And here's the thing, maybe it does tie a little bit back to our previous episode, because King James the First, you said...
King James Bible? Yeah.
Like, and he was heavily into the, like, witchcraft stuff. So maybe that might get had a crossover episode or something. You know what I mean?
It is weird how close these two episodes actually are.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, you look at the crosses and stuff. And this is very, like, religion heavy. But a lot of breaking, like, confession and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Confession, rosary beads, repenting. And they do have, I forget what they call it, but basically... smudge going in the church.
That's true too. Yeah. Huh. That's like, it's all about keeping the curses away, really, is what it is all about, comes down to.
Now, we can't leave the world of curse words behind without acknowledging their everyday magic, the psychological, social, and emotional power. Why do people swear? Today's science suggests reasons both primal and profound. Pain relief. Swearing does actually activate response, releasing endorphins and temporarily raising pain tolerance. In experiments, volunteers who cursed endured cold water pain longer than those who remained polite. For emotional catharsis and defiance, curse words function as a pressure valve, letting out frustration, anger, or fear in a burst of ritualized transgression. Mark Twain, no stranger to colorful language, noted, quote, "When angry, count to four. When very angry, swear," end quote. Group bonding and identity. Among friends or within social groups, shared bad language can signal camaraderie and group membership and honest self-expression. And power, control, and humor.
Swearing can assert dominance or flip social hierarchies, converting potential violence into manageable, controlled aggression. Profanity, well-timed, can also be a source of humor or satire.
But science also supports centuries-old wisdom. There's a double edge to the curse word sword. Swearing too often may blunt its power, emotionally and socially, and in every society, certain words retain their ability to shock, offend, provoke, rooted in specific historical taboos. So we've seen that not all curse words are created equal, and not all cultures banish the same taboos. Across the globe, what is profane or powerful is in one language may be trivial in another. In Spanish and Italian, profanity often draws sexual terminology or blasphemies. In Japanese, words associated with death or misfortune are taboo, and certain numbers or syllables are avoided. In some African and indigenous societies, curses focus on social and familial order, and slurs may be used as healing or balancing tools under controlled circumstances.
Religion, politics, and historical trauma shape the landscape of bad words. From the French Revolution, where profanity was used as rebellion, to strict censorship of blasphemy in the Islamic world.
The functions are nonetheless universal. Expressing emotion, forging group identity, policing boundaries, and sometimes channeling the uncanny sense that words themselves can summon, bless. Now tonight, I'm just gonna go to, I decided, despite it not really matching up with everything in the theme here, we're just gonna read some cursed stories from Reddit that I found.
I like that.
Because I just feel like when we have an opportunity to go to Reddit, you go...
Oh yeah, Reddit's the best.
Now, this was posted 7 years ago by Deleted on the Witchcraft subreddit. And the specific question was, were you cursed? And this person wrote, I believe I was. When I was a much younger witch, with more curiosity than practice under my magical belt, I was fooling around with this super hot guy who was a practitioner of voodoo and who referred to himself as Bokor. I didn't want anything serious, but he did. Eventually, I called things off. I left as I felt he was getting too pushy and I didn't want to lead him on if things weren't going anywhere. Shortly after that, my life started going seriously haywire. My work situation took a nosedive, my bathroom flooded, my refrigerator broke, my dog got in a terrible fight where I ended up pretty torn up myself. It felt like every aspect of my life was suffering. It took me a while to get suspicious because bad things happen, right? But this all just seemed ridiculous. My fling did have access to plenty of my personal effects, after all, and I knew enough about that world to know how things worked. I started to entertain the idea that he'd thrown a love me or die my way, but I still wasn't taking it entirely seriously. That changed when I was driving home from work behind a dump truck, when a rock flew out of the back of the truck and slammed into my windshield. Right in front of my face. Fortunately, it didn't shatter the window completely, but it was bad enough I had to pull over and have towed to a repair shop.
Oh yeah, she's cursed. Yeah,
no joke, 3 days after it was repaired, a freaking turkey flew directly into my windshield and shattered the window right in front of my face again.
Oh my god.
After that, I was like, okay, I think I get it. A reading from a friend seemed to confirm what I thought. I will credit this experience with igniting my interest in practice and magic, however, I managed to get personal effect of my flings, did a mirror spell, engaged in a serious 13-day cleansing bath, swept out and washed down my house from attic to basement, the works. Happily, everything noticeably calmed down a hell of a lot after I completely blocked said fling from my life. That was a lot going wrong.
Yeah, it was. It doesn't seem like a coincidence at that point. Yeah.
And then Zelda Alary, right below this, said, that's intense. My friend and I suspected something similar happened with him. He was dating a guy who was also into voodoo and really just conjuring some dark-ish that neither my friend or I interested in experimenting with. I remember when my friend called it off with the guy, he did not take it well at all. We actually came home one night a couple of days after they broke up and had this really eerie feeling someone was watching us in our home, but thought not much of it. We actually cast a little protection spell on our home and ourselves, hoping it would ease the tension felt in the air. I don't know if tension is even the right word. It was just heavy. Like, I remembered actually stopped us both in the doorway and had us wondering if someone had been in. A couple of days later, we gone out for the evening, and when we returned, we noticed things in our house were off, like someone had been there. Things didn't appear to be moved, but like they had been touched. It felt like someone was recently there and they left quickly. Our doors were locked and our security system was still set, but we also noticed the heavy watching feeling wasn't there anymore. We chalked it up to our spell working and maybe we were just paranoid. Well, not even 24 hours later, my friend's life literally started falling apart. Everything from work to his health was affected and we were just at a loss.
That's weird.
He got into a fight with his boss, which came out of nowhere. He broke his wrist and then sprained his ankle. It was a disaster. We called in reinforcements and went to someone we knew through other witches, who is far more experienced in their craft than either of us. She agreed he was cursed, or that some sort of hex was placed on him.
I mean, that's easy enough to do. Yeah, you're cursed. Just looking at you, you're cursed.
And agreed to assist him. She removed the hex and told us to get in touch should anything further happen. Everything seemed to clear up and things went back to normal. But about 2, maybe 3 weeks later, said woman called my friend and asked that neither of us get in touch with her again. We never heard from her or the hex again. This next post, written by A Girl Has No Name 17, written and edited 7 years ago. My story is that I got a highly graphic death vision a few months prior to the events. The vision didn't make any sense, so I filed this under some random weird shit. Then I started being ill a lot. The symptoms were vague enough to be undiagnosable, but nasty enough to keep me nearly bedridden for weeks. I was lethargic, weak. My mom actually said that I seemed to lose my spark, that I used to be a fairly vivacious person, and then suddenly I wasn't. A couple months later, I was at my partner's place. I drank some whiskey, took a big ass knife, and cut off my arm. I don't understand that. Then I just sat there calmly and watched the blood drip until my partner saw what was happening. I have no explanation for that. There was no real trigger. What? I don't have any major psychiatric conditions, and it's as if I was in a trance. I still have 3 scars on my arm. The next day, I sustained a major bodily injury out of the blue. The next day, I was found unconscious. This was pretty much the exact same thing I saw in my vision. My hands started shaking, realized, which took a while. Another week later, I developed a new set of genuine LAR symptoms, screaming in my sleep, laughing, hallucinating. My mom rushed me to the ER again. Believe it or not, I was still in denial. I am not suggestible. I am very strong-willed. I am tough and very resilient. I trust my instincts. I am very self-aware. I have wards in my apartment. I didn't think I'd truly wronged anyone. Another week, I came down with severe abdominal pain 24/7. Not the kind of pain I ever experienced before. At the point, I was seeking mystical help. An experienced shaman did a depossession ritual and said that my stomach was stuffed with snakes. The pain disappeared literally within an hour. I had a few decent days, but not so fast. Another few days later, I developed constant pain in my back, which spread like wildfire. Suffice to say, I spent the next 2 months wanting to climb up the wall from pain despite already being on opioids. The heavy-duty painkillers were not working. The ultrasound I insisted on showed nothing. I actually asked my best friend to look after my mom because I was pretty certain I was going to die very soon, as what I was feeling was very much akin to gradual systemic failure. I gave her instructions as to what to do with my few possessions of sentimental value. I was exhausted from pain, barely able to sit up, unable to find a pain-free position even in bed. But that time I felt like my life turned into an actual horror movie, since as soon as one problem got cleared, something new and medically inexplicable popped up. Another friend whose powerful energy worker got involved. The first time she did some work on me, she said my natural light energy, she kept working on it over the span of several weeks and things gradually stabilized. I'm finally feeling like myself again. Who did this? I'll never know. For sure. But my main suspect is an egomaniacal occult practitioner who pursued me last year, since he tried to break up me and my partner. I did not take kindly to that. I rejected him. Then I kind of forgot about him. But I guess he did not.
That would probably be the person who did it, I would suspect.
I found this one really interesting. Posted by Lord Voldy O 6 years ago. Sorry, it's not me, but curses are a cultural thing in the poorest part. Serbia, so I have tons of family stories. So let's go back to the 80s. My grandma, who helps Serbian immigrants get settled in France, is helping this young woman. Her name is Anna. She's in her 20s, polyglot. I don't know what that means. Amazingly smart and goddamn gorgeous. She came to France to study languages, but didn't know anyone, so people sent her to my grandma. My gran does her job. She found her a nice job as an au pair for rich kids in the richest part of Paris, where she'll get free food and accommodations with a pay every month. So for years, everything's perfect. She gets her diploma in languages, gets a great job as a translator in the government, has friends, a boyfriend, all the stuff successful people have. Here's another detail I have to add. There was a little community of Serb immigrants in Paris. People started to talk, and some of these people got really jealous, and suddenly Anna went from a healthy, successful woman to the shadow of a human being in less than 3 months. 3 months of hell, where she couldn't sleep. She was disgusted by food, couldn't think properly, and became antisocial. Of course, at first, nobody thought of witchcraft. They all told her to go to a psychiatrist and see what was wrong, so she went, and nothing. She had no mental issue. Once everyone learned of the news, maybe it was not her mind, but body, so she went, and still nothing. She was fine. After months and months, her health in mind and body deteriorate. She wouldn't get out of her flat, even to go to work. She would only speak Serb, even though she used to only speak it when she really had to. She got thinner and thinner, even if my grand monitored every meal and made sure she ate enough. Anyway, things were not improving in the slightest, and people started to link witchcraft to poor Anna. Those were just rumors, but my gram was sure it was witchcraft. She saw it before and she knew the results of a curse. So she started searching Anna's flat. She inspected every inch of the place, nothing. But the only place she had not inspected was the bedroom. So she searched the bedroom and guess what? She found a little pouch with chicken bones in it. That was the proof. Chicken bones are used for rituals and curses. Anna was cursed, and the worst thing about it is that nobody could stop it. Only the caster can stop the curse. Of course, my gran tried to find who was the sick fuck who enjoyed destroying the life of a young woman, but she never found who did it. Very often, my gran went to Anna's flat to inspect it and more than once found chicken bones. Under the carpet, under the mattress, Anna moved, but it just followed her no matter what. She tried everything to get rid of the curse, but nothing worked, so she gave up and herself from the world completely. And after years and years, Anna's health got worse and worse, and she finally died at 32 in a tiny flat in the poorest part of Paris. I know so much more stories about lives being destroyed by petty revenge curses that I can only recommend. Some were bathed in witchcraft. Now, tonight, as we near Halloween and the boundaries of the world's blur, remember, in every curse word, in every whispered taboo, in every name spoken with fear or awe, we glimpse the ancient magic. Words can hurt, heal, curse, charm, or conjure, and sometimes just release the pressure of a stubbed toe. But beneath the veneer of modern profanity and comedy, beneath the theater rituals and inscribed tablets, we still carry old primal beliefs that speech is an act of power, that names and words have consequences, and that to break a taboo is to enter the realm of risk, change, and transformation. The ancient instinct survives. Cast your words wisely, whether a shout, a whisper, a curse, or a blessing. For on this night, perhaps more than any other, who knows what might be listening. Chelsea, that is the episode.
I learned a lot, and now I will curse with pride, as it is not only releasing the emotional baggage that comes with life, but it'll keep me clean from curses.
And it most importantly links us to our ancestors.
Exactly. There's all kinds of good in cursing, I found out in this episode. I have nothing to add because, wow, my mind is blown from most of that. But that was a great episode. I quite enjoyed that. I learned a lot of new things that I didn't know. And it's always the fun things that you do in everyday life that is like you never think of why you do it. It's just as it is, and it's just another...
It has shaped so much of society that, like, You can't even begin to characterize every little aspect of it. All we can literally look at is ritual, but that's not where it's going to be limited to.
My mind is constantly blown, in which the most mundane things in our life that you do without thinking is tied back to something that happened like hundreds of years ago. And we just, like, even the fact that we don't say bear, like, that's insane. And it's from so fucking long ago, you can't even imagine. That just blows my mind. Yet here we are, doing it every single day because that was a belief that was held so long ago. So those are my thoughts. I quite like that. That was a very nice Halloween episode.
I'm glad you liked it. And with that, I have been Taylor, here with Chelsea. We are Journey to the Fringe. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Fuck.
That's a good way to end it.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.